The University of Kansas Health System is proud to be the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Current. From youth athletes to the pros, we put player care first to turn their dreams into reality. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/kccurrent.
Second half of the program begins right now. By the way, I was alerted by a listener. Of course, Eric Hosmer is going to Boston. That's where his, is it current or ex-girlfriend lives? Casey McDonald, right? She works for Nesson. Yeah. So there you go. Interesting point. None of us even thought about that in our There Can Be Only One. Second half of the program begins right now with the two-minute drill around the country, 2 minutes at a time. Talking to the people, covering the stories, where they are happening. It's what we do on a Friday, people. It's what we do. And who better to start with than Kevin Rogers from WQAM in Miami. Kevin, how are you, sir?
Saran, doing well. How are you?
Very good. Biggest game for the U, hosting Notre Dame here. Biggest game for the U since when?
I would probably say since the Ohio State National Championship in 2001, in which they lost in double overtime. They turned the ball over five times in that game. It's got to be, because this team has never been to an ACC championship since entering the ACC in, I think, 2003, and they'll be in the ACC championship as long as, you know, nothing totally implodes over the next 2 weeks, and they'll face Clemson. But, yeah, obviously very huge that this Miami team, Saran, I believe, I'm not breaking news here, but they beat Notre Dame, they beat Virginia, they beat Pitt, they beat Clemson. They're in the top four. That there's no way you can keep them out of the top four. And, yeah, it's a very big game. It's a big game against an old rival. It's down here. It's a primetime game. It doesn't get any better than that.
I would agree when you consider the fact that TCU and Oklahoma have to play. They're going to knock one of those out of the way. They will have taken Notre Dame out of the way, and then Alabama and Georgia have to play. It would be impossible. Miami is one of the handful of teams that still controls its own destiny for getting into the college football playoffs, and it starts this week. Yet they're a dog, right? They're about a three-point dog. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, and you know what? They should be a dog. I mean, Notre Dame, the way they played, especially of late, you know, pounding USC and NC State, and they've won at Michigan State, they deserve it. And they have a great running game. They have a great offensive line. And, you know, the perception is, I mean, you know this, Saren, about, you know, lines and stuff, that, you know, it's all about perception. The perception is Notre Dame has played very well. Miami snuck by in a lot of games. Virginia Tech, you know, they ended up pulling away in that game, and it was a little more comfortable than the previous few victories. But Miami's had a lot of close shades. They have, and they found a way to win. They came back against Florida State, came back against Georgia Tech. They held off a North Carolina team that's terrible on the road. So, you know, you would think that Notre Dame is the better team. But at the same time, you know, still, Miami's got a lot of momentum right now. Not that Notre Dame doesn't, but Miami absolutely does. Second consecutive primetime game at home, that, you know, this is big for them. Even though these kids weren't born when the Miami-Notre Dame rivalry was at its peak, it's still a big game, and Notre Dame should be favored when it's all said and done.
210 yards rushing last time out against Virginia Tech, though, and they did handle Virginia Tech soundly. That's by far been their best win, the number 13 Hokies at the time. 28-10, there have been a lot of close calls. All the turnovers they got against Syracuse and only beating them by 8 points and having it be a one-point game late in the fourth quarter, all those things made you think. And had me, I've got an AP vote. I've been slowly dragging them up. But they do look like they're hitting their stride. But do they have the quarterback play, whether it's this game or somewhere along the line, Clemson, a bowl game, do they have the quarterback play it takes to beat the biggest of the big boys?
I don't think so. It's one of those things, Saren, be a game manager. Don't make mistakes. And we saw Malik Rozier make a few mistakes last week against Virginia Tech, which kind of kept him in the game. And, you know, you look back at last year, Deshaun Watson, you know, he wins the national championship for Clemson against Alabama, and we know Alabama's found a way to get the national championships without great quarterback play. They don't depend on that. They depend on their running game but and their defense. But when you look at the quarterback play, it's just you don't have to be a hero. But then again, you look at guys like that, you know, Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen and all of them, you know, how great of years have they had, and they're supposed to be top picks. So it's kind of like you don't have to be that. You don't have to have, you know, be a top 10 type quarterback for the NFL. Just don't make mistakes, and if they don't make mistakes, then they should be okay.
All right, the Dolphins are 4-4, but amazingly have been outscored by 63 points. Now, a big chunk of that comes from a 20-0 shutout loss to the Saints and the 40-0 beatdown they took at the hands of the Ravens. Last stand against the Raiders, was that it? And with the trade of Jay Ajayi, did they look at this team and say, we're not good enough, we're going to start moving pieces to start building towards the future? And if that's the case, how big a teardown is it going to be?
I personally think Soren, at least from what I've heard, this was not a we're building for the future. This was we are getting a divorce. And that's why I feel like it was with Adam Gase and Jay Ajayi and the team, that they needed to move on. And they just were like, you know, let's make a move. We have other guys we can turn to. And Jay Ajayi, they got him in the fifth round of Boise State, and they sucked everything they could out of him. And they were able to do that. They turned into a fourth rounder. I don't know what that's going to be in the future. But the Dolphin team, since Adam Gase has gotten here, they found ways to win these games, but they're not winning games in blowout fashion. Every game they win is very close, and I feel like all the losses are getting blown out in. And granted, the Oakland game, they hung towards the end, but they scored a late touchdown. They've had a couple garbage touchdowns in the fourth quarter this year. I think their scoring numbers even look better than they really should be. But they're an all right team, but I guess we can put a big asterisk on this season simply because they don't have their quarterback. And Jay Cutler can only do so much. Ryan Tannehill will be the guy again next year, and Devontae Parker has been good when he's healthy. The problem is he hasn't been healthy all season long, and who knows what's going to happen to Ndamukong Suh moving forward. So really, this Dolphin team, you like to see them when they're the complete product. You don't get that in the NFL with all the injuries right now, but they're a middle-of-the-road team, simple as that.
Yeah, that's reality of what it is. All right, well said, well put. Kevin Rogers in Miami. Enjoy the U and Notre Dame. I know as a Seminoles fan, it'll be bittersweet, but with the way your season's gone. But enjoy it nonetheless, K-Rodge. Appreciate the time, buddy.
All right, friends. Thank you, Stu.
And in Phoenix, Arizona, we drink way too much Corona.
Dave Burns, 98.7 Arizona Sports, in Phoenix, Arizona's next. Dave, how are you?
Good afternoon, Soren. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Listen, I know what my answer is to this question. I'm curious what yours is. Did the Suns get enough for Eric Bledsoe?
Oh, no. No. I mean, I hope that was your answer, right?
Yes. I mean, I think it's a disastrous trade.
No, it's. I think it's reflective, and I'm not saying this to try and deflect criticism off of Ryan McDonough, because goodness knows he deserves it. But I do think it's probably reflective of how poor the offers they were getting for him. I mean, if this was the best they could do, obviously it wasn't good enough. But I suspect this was probably the best they could do, which then begs the question, why not wait a little longer? Why not wait until December 15th? Why not wait until the trade deadline just to make sure you could maximize your value? This isn't near enough. I mean, Greg Monroe is not going to be here long enough for a cup of coffee. My co-host, who's pretty dialed in over there, doesn't seem to think that Monroe's even going to play for the Phoenix Suns, that he'll be traded or waived or something along those lines. The draft pick is probably the most convoluted sense of rules attached to it, to how it's going to convey to the Phoenix Suns. It might not even show up until 2020 or 2021. No, it's not even close. The Suns, Eric Bledsoe, they all botched this whole deal every single way you possibly can. And I hope, as a longtime Suns follower, that they are doing some serious self-reflection over there as to how things went so wrong, that this was the best they could get for Bledsoe, because it got real bad. Surrounded.
I mean, the answer is they need a new general manager, isn't it? You fire your coach, and sure, we're a little extra bitter here in Kansas City because Earl Watson's one of our own, but you fire your coach three games in, that means you didn't have any confidence in him going into the season. I mean, that's just preposterous that comes up. Then there's talk that you're not getting along with the first-round pick, is not getting along with Eric Bledsoe, and Bledsoe's not getting around. And then you end up announcing, yeah, he's not playing for her, or you let it leak out, he's never going to play for us again. You put him on the bench. Of course you're not going to get any offers. Had you seen any of this coming, which is your job if you're running an organization, president, GM, wherever you want that thing to fall, you would have seen this. And when everybody's making moves and maneuvering around, you'd have gotten into the trading sweepstakes, and you probably could have gotten really good value when Houston and Oklahoma City and Cleveland and Boston and teams that really feel like they've got a chance are maneuvering to grab every piece of talent they can get their hands on. You could have gotten in the middle of that mix. I mean, this is a colossal failure.
There's no doubt about it. It's a disaster, and you're absolutely right. You touched on something that I've been talking about for the last couple of days. I think the fundamental error in all of this came at the end of the regular season, back in the middle of April, with the failure to recognize how upset Eric Bledsoe was going to be with all this. Don't wait for him to ask for a trade. Don't wait for him to tweet out, I don't want to be here. Recognize that he probably isn't going to want to be here after you sat him for 15 games when he was perfectly healthy and having the best season of his life. Recognize that he probably wasn't happy, that the reason you were sitting him was to potentially draft the guy who was going to come in and take his job. Don't wait for him to not be upset over a contract extension that he's going to not get. Trade him when his value is absolutely the highest before he becomes this disgruntled employee who doesn't want to be there anymore, thereby minimizing your ability to get return. I agree with all of that. I think Ryan McDonagh is up against the wall on this one, and I don't know how much longer he's going to be able to survive an organization where there is clearly so much dysfunction. Now, I'll be honest with you, a lot of people around here, Sarin, like to blame the owner for it. Talk about the culture that he's created there and how it's kind of a, well, it's a dysfunctional culture that he's created around there. And maybe Ryan McDonagh is a symptom of that culture and not the cause of that culture. But I'll tell you this, if he doesn't figure out a way to drastically improve his level of communication with his players, he's going to find that he's the next one out. I mean, there's no doubt he is next in line.
9-3 from Josh Jackson so far as the number four overall pick. He is shooting 39% from the floor right now. And you just moved your point guard. De'Aaron Fox is playing better basketball in Sacramento as a point guard. Lauri Markkanen, of course, is probably getting, if I looked at it, I'm sure he's getting close to the most minutes. Actually, he's not, but he's putting up the biggest number, 16-8 right now for the Bulls is Lauri Markkanen. And Dennis Smith is looking like a highlight reel for the Dallas Mavericks, also at the point guard position. Is there buyer's remorse already on the Josh Jackson draft?
No, not yet. I think they're... I think they're buying into the idea that it's going to take time, that it's a process. We call it around here the timeline, even hashtag the timeline, if you were so inclined to look it up. And I don't think anybody's panicking over Josh Jackson. They now, whether this is flawed thinking or not, we can debate this 2 years from now or maybe even a year from now. They got one look at Josh Jackson in the summer league, and they think he's going to be the next Kawhi Leonard. They don't expect it to happen overnight. Because he's a kid, they don't expect it to happen overnight because he's on the court with essentially a bunch of kids, Booker, Chris, Dragan Bender. I mean, I think Booker's the only one of the group who's actually allowed to legally drink. So they're kids out there. They're children. And he's not going to get that much better playing with a bunch of kids who are also trying to find their way in this league. They have a lot of faith that they got it right with Josh Jackson and that they'll be vindicated in that move a year or two or three from now. We'll see.
All right, yeah, we will. How good is U of A this year?
Oh, U of A's fantastic. I mean, if they can beat the FBI in the bracket, they should be fine. But other than that, that team is stacked. I mean, the FBI is a solid number one seed. I don't know come tournament time if you want to bet against them, but yes, U of A looks really solid. It's the best team Sean Miller's ever had down there, and there's a lot of pressure on Sean Miller, and it's coming from all sides now because of this investigation, because of the allegations, because this is the best team that he's had, and because he's never taken U of A to a Final Four. There's going to be a lot of intense pressure on him if he can't get there this year with this team, no doubt.
All right, and finally, was that Arizona's last stand, the Cardinals I'm talking about, was that their last stand last night on Thursday Night Football?
No doubt. They lost their left tackle. They lost their star safety, who was one of the best players on the team. If you look at the numbers, they're 4-5. Offensively, you saw it. They've got nothing in the tank. Adrian Peterson was completely bottled up, and Drew Stanton is simply not good enough to beat you on a consistent basis in this league because of his accuracy problems and the fact that outside of Larry Fitzgerald, that whole wide receiver core needs to be nuked and start over and go from the beginning and see if you can do better. The Arizona Cardinals, the era has ended, I think. The era of them being this relevant contending team, fun to watch. There was nothing fun about watching last night's game.
No, including that all-black uniform with a white helmet. That wasn't fun either. Dave Burns.
I couldn't read the numbers to save my life. I was sitting in the press box. I couldn't tell who was who from up there because of those uniforms.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, the trust me, the Seahawks uniforms were garish, but at least you could figure out who the hell who was out there on the field. Dave Burns in Phoenix, great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it, man. Have a great weekend.
You guys, sir, and you too.
What's made Milwaukee famous?
Scott Wisniewski, that's what. ESPN 540 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Scott, how are you?
I'm great. How's it going?
It's going well. I mean, Bucks fans, are they still giddy about the robbery they pulled off to get Bledsoe away from the Suns? I think that's a fantastic deal.
It's a great deal. And, you know, there was some talk when the discussions first started that they'd have to give up Brogdon or Thonmaker. They didn't have to give up any of that. And you know what? I like Greg Monroe. I like him better than Jason Kidd does. And it would have been nice if you could have fleeced them even more and had him take John Henson instead. But aside from that, I don't think they could have done it any better. And I think it's important because one of my fears watching this Bucks team is even though Giannis has said, I'm committed to Milwaukee. I'm not going anywhere. They need to build players around him because eventually you're going to want to win, right? So I think it's a good faith that you're showing your star, one of the best players in the NBA, that we're willing to build around you. I felt the same way when I thought they should have been more aggressive to get Irving. But they got Bledsoe. It's a good start, and it's going to help this team. And they've kind of struggled coming out of the gate. So I think this can only help them.
Yeah, and I think it'll take a little time, too. I mean, I would caution Bucks fans. You probably know this more than me. But, Bledsoe likes to play with the ball in his hands. Antetokounmpo, or the Greek Freak, since I'm nowhere near ever getting it right on his name, likes to play with the ball in his hands. So they're going to have to figure it out. But both can play off the ball as well. So I think it'll take time, 10, 12, 15 games. But then it will click, and I think this is going to be a really dangerous team. And I think the Bucks got to, and I love the combinations that they now have in their backcourt. So I think this is a really underrated. Not just I think everybody agrees they got the better of the deal, but I think what it's going to do for the Bucks is really being underrated. I think it's like, oh yeah, they got a pretty good player. No, I think they got, they can really play some defense back there now. I like what the Bucks did. I think that's nice. So I'm impressed. Let's turn our attention to the Badgers. First of all, I give them credit, much like Miami. They're kind of tugging Miami up the rankings in my AP ballot that I've got because neither one of them's really had an impressive win as far as the caliber of opponents, as it's turned out, that they've played. But they are at least starting to slap some people around, winning by an average of over 3 touchdowns in their last 3 games. And it's coming at the right time. Iowa and Michigan, both games at home, but these are their toughest 2 games they've played all year, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And for those who are lamenting and wringing their hands about where they're ranked and how they are being underranked and undervalued, these are the games you have to win. Now, granted, another tough loss. They lost their best receiver, Cephas, for the season. But you beat a team like Iowa, who just absolutely destroyed Ohio State last week, and you beat Michigan. Then you go on, you win the Big Ten championship game. Then you're in. I think you're in. You're going to get in the college football playoffs. But if you don't win one of these 2 games or you struggle and then you lose that championship game, then you get what you deserve. So, for all the Badger fans who are upset with where they are in the rankings, this is put up or shut up time for the Badgers. And if they take care of business, I think enough dominoes will fall their way and they get in. And again, I think it only helped them that Iowa clobbered Ohio State last week. Because if Iowa would have lost that game to Ohio State, I still could have seen a scenario where a 13-0 Badger team didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, I could too. I think the only way right now, though, with OU and TCU taking one down, Notre Dame or Miami, I think you really do kind of have to root for Miami, right? So that either if Miami takes care of Notre Dame, then Miami or Clemson will fall as well. So if there is a rooting interest left for the Badgers, although I do think if they run the table, even with the kind of weak schedule, I think the Big Ten will end up having enough juice. I guess your rooting interest would be for Miami to take down Notre Dame so that then Miami and Clemson eliminate one of the two?
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right if you're a Badger fan. And honestly, this whole thing could be solved. I know they don't want to do more than a 14 playoff, and they have many reasons why. And we can debate that for an hour, and I know we don't have that much time. But I still think it should come down to your Power 6 conferences, whoever wins the conference championship game is in, and 2 at-large teams, whether that's 2 other Power 6 teams, whether that's Notre Dame and a Mountain West team if they have an undefeated season. However you want to do it, you could solve a lot of this debate by just adding one more round. And it's because if you're telling us that the Power 6 means so much, because that's what they say, ACC, SEC, you know, Pac-12 or Pac-14 now, whatever they are, big. If these conferences mean so much, then why don't you just automatically reward the champion who wins the championship game and then still allow for, say, Alabama lost to Georgia this year, that they could still both get in. But, again, whether that happens or not, it's still better than it was 5 years ago. And you know, I guess you take small steps, right?
Yeah, I think Power 5 you meant, right? Big 12?
I'm sorry, yes, yeah. I meant Power 5.
Yeah.
And then you have your at-large.
Yeah.
And then you can still capture everything, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I vehemently disagree with you. We absolutely could not debate for an hour. It's done. You just said it all. It's over. That's how long the debate takes, about 35 to 45 seconds. And so that's why it will take the rest of this first 10-year contract to get it, because it makes too much sense for anybody that has anything to do with college football to get it right that fast.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah, yeah, I love it. Scott, hey, great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Enjoy the big game this week with the Hawkeyes. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. That'll be the highlight of the weekend, because that Bears-Packer game is going to be a real snooze fest.
Didn't even bring it up. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.